welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Lindsay Hughley, and joining me today is Brian O'Connor. Brian has been with the Texas Bankers Association since 1989, providing insurance coverages for banks throughout Texas, Oklahoma, and the Midwest. Today, Brian and his team at Bankers Insurance Agency insure well over 250 banks. They insure banks ranging in assets from less than $50 million to over $14 billion. Over the years, Brian has been an expert witness for the FDIC, spoken at many banking conferences across the country, and every month makes presentations to bank board members on their insurance coverage. He's one of the few agents in the country that specializes in banking insurance. Welcome, Brian. We have a really great conversation planned for today. But first, here at Banking Matters, we always like to hear how our guests got their start in the banking industry.
Well, good morning, Lindsay. I'm glad to be here. I always tell people nobody grows up wanting to be in the insurance business unless, like, your parents own it or something like that and own an insurance agency. Most of us literally fall into it, and I'm no different than that. I grew up wanting to be a police officer, and so I was a policeman in Austin, Texas. And one day, I was a motorcycle cop at the time. This guy waves at me and says, "Hey, I want to talk to you about wreck my son was involved in." And cutting to the chase, it turns out he was the regional director for State Farm. And he says, "I want you to come by and see me about maybe a job." And I laughed. But then again, I said, "Why not?" I just recently gotten my degree. So I went and saw him, and I had printed up a resume and lent it towards, you know, insurance investigator. And when he read it, he just laughed. He said, "No, I want you to be an agent." And that's when I laughed back at him. I said, "No, I don't want to get into sales." But anyway, I ended up starting with State Farm and taught insurance for 5 years. And then in 1989, as you mentioned, the Texas Bankers Association approached me, and here I am today. So that's how I got into it. I fell into it like everybody else does.
I feel like that is a common thread with many, many, many of our guests on Banking Matters is we call it an accidental banker. I had someone refer to it as that, and I said that fits extremely well.
Yeah, it does me, that's for sure.
Yes. And so I know, so you've been with TBA since 1989. And so roughly how much over 250 institutions are you insuring right now?
In Texas, I think we're down to maybe 500 banks. When I started, we had like 1,100. We insure, I believe, about a third of the marketplace in Texas and in Oklahoma.
And so most of your banks, are they located in Texas and Oklahoma? Can you insure banks anywhere?
Yeah, we actually have licenses. And I think last time we checked, 44 different states. And the reason for that is we have some banks that have loan production offices everywhere. And so we have to be licensed in those states in order to provide them work comp or liability, whatever they need. Currently today, we've got New Mexico, Arkansas. I even have a bank in Kansas, which is, you know, kind of interesting. New Mexico, I said. Anyway, the majority of those are going to be in the Midwest, so.
That's awesome. And so I can only imagine one part of banking that I've never had super hands-on is in the decisions for insurance making and selecting all of that. And so I can only imagine that banks face a ton of really unique exposures that probably only insurance can cover. What are some of these exposures and what policies respond to those exposures?
Yeah, your bank and banking has unique exposures. And that's why, you know, I just feel like having somebody specializes helps. As a banker, you recognize that, of course, there's a robbery, there's embezzlement, there's counterfeit currencies. There's today, at least in Texas, fraudulent checks are rampant. And a couple of years ago, I'm not sure if it was a Texas, Oklahoma thing, but we call them ATM smash and grabs, where they were just bulldozing them over, blowing them up and stealing the money that was inside of them. Banks, of course, can get sued for anything today. They can lender liability, they get sued for employment practices. You've got cyber exposures, which is a huge exposure today. And so all banks have cyber liability insurance. And then even just the buildings. And honestly, interestingly enough, It's the property insurance today that really has given everybody headaches. I mean, it's no different than your own homeowner's insurance. I'm sure you're aware that those premiums are going up and those deductibles are going up. And banks are facing those same issues today. I go in there talking about bond and D&O, and when it comes right down to it, that's the one that's given them the most heartache today. But, really the bigger exposures financially will probably be embezzlement and possibly cyber.
Yeah, for sure. So how are all of these challenges that you've talked through, how are those covered by insurance policies?
Well, there's really only a handful of insurance policies that can take care of that, all of that at the same time. Financial institution bond is the first one, which covers, I like to keep it simple when I meet with a board of directors or somebody who's new to insurance. I would say bond is for stealing. So if anybody's stealing from the bank or is trying to take money from the bank, you're going to look at your financial institution bond. Then you've got directors and officers, and that's for suing. If somebody sues the bank for a decision that's made in the four walls of your institution, then you're going to look at directors and officers liability. Cyber liability is just what it says. It's essentially today's exposure. Initially, let me back up. Initially, it was supposed to be liability only. Customers sue the bank because you got hacked and they stole your information. Well, I explained to bankers today, that's not your exposure anymore because everybody's had their information stolen one way or the other. I was part of the Experian debacle that happened, 5 years ago, where practically everybody in the United States had their information stolen. So if your bank had information or your customer had information stolen from the bank, they'd have to prove that that was the first time it ever had happened. But really, ransomware is the bigger exposure there. And then for all the other exposures like automobile, fire, wind, hail, anything else physically happened to your bank, then you're going to be looking, of course, at your commercial package policy. And then we also, we call them ancillary coverages. We have forced place insurance. We have mortgage impairment insurance. We have mortgage errors and omissions insurance. There's a lot of other exposures that banks have. And we actually do everything except for group health insurance. And we used to do that, but it got to the point where we just had more headaches than was worth. And we continue to look at that as a possibility, but we typically leave that to the people that handle it on a daily basis.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it seems like there was about four buckets of different insurance policies that you had mentioned. Why don't we start with the first one, with the financial institution bond, and then we can kind of maybe hopefully have you back for a couple more podcasts so that we can dig deeper into those.
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk about that. I mean, I've been teaching insurance for bankers for, again, the last 30 years, and I can spend an hour on each one of those because they all are very unique. But, going back to the bond, as I said, that's stealing. And your biggest exposure, well, let me tell you that there's A, B, C, D, E, and F. There's six coverage parts in every financial institution bond. And some of the older bankers may call it a blanket bond. And that terminology is fine. But financial institution bond is what we say today. And I don't care what insurance company you have right now. Bonds are pretty much all the same in the fact that they were designed after what we call the Surety Association of America's Form 24. And again, those six coverage parts are found in every single bond. And the first one is embezzlement. And that still today is one of your biggest exposures that you have in banking. And typically, when I talk to bankers, I said, the recipe is usually the same. It's most, you must trust an employee. She's been there the longest. I say she, because unfortunately, a lot of times they're women. She's been there the longest. Her fingers aren't everything. Internal controls aren't what they're supposed to be. And last but not least, vacations. They always have a reason to come back during vacation. In particular, to help balance the vault or something like that. We recently, wasn't our loss, but recently there was a bank that we heard about that had a $2 million embezzlement out of the drive-through vault. And that normally makes most bankers go, wow, drive-through vault. And in retrospect, when I spoke to the banker, I said, how did this happen? He goes, Brian, we should have seen it. The president should have seen it. Everybody should have seen it. We knew she gambled. We knew that she gambled often. And, looking back, and I asked the question, well, why did you have so much money in your drive-through vault? Well, they told us they needed that much. You know, so they trusted their employees. And when I teach this part of the class, I usually throw up a picture of Ronald Reagan, where he used to say, reference to the Russians, trust it, verify. And anyway, that claim ended up being that she was addicted to gambling. And we've seen that time and time again, that they're just borrowing the money. Their husband or their wife just lost their job. It's going to be temporary, or they have a drug addiction. So there's usually a reason behind it, and they never think they're going to get caught. But that goes back to why, if you've been around a long time, it used to be 2 weeks off. They wanted you off for 2 weeks in a row.
Right.
And today, banks, we just can't do that. And so the insurance industry, we just want 9 days off. We want a week with a weekend on either side. So there's your 9 days. And then we just emphasize to our bankers, you know, if somebody runs across something that seems a little bit fishy, speak up, you know, but don't go to the person that you're, you know, wondering about. Go to another officer at the bank and let them know. So that's embezzlement. And then you've got robbery, on-premises and robbery off-premises. That's B and C. And we still see those on occasion. They've really died down. The largest robbery we've had in our history was a $600,000 morning robbery. And people used to think or have asked me, was it an inside job? I said, no, it was good, bad luck. Bad luck for the bank, good luck for the robber. It was an early morning robbery. He was hiding behind some bushes near the employee entrance. And it's one of the things I always emphasize, make sure that your entrance is wide open and clear. He stopped her by gunpoint. He was fully, more or less hidden. She couldn't even tell, you know, male or female, but she knew it was a man from his voice. And he forced her inside, and then he forced her to go to the front door and wave at the next employee to come in. And as most of your employees know, you usually have an all clear. You have the drapes are open or a sign is turned over or whatever. This was not the all clear, but she came in anyway. And then between the two of them, he's able to get the vault open and he walked off with $600,000. And oddly enough, to this day, they never caught him. And that just surprises me, because in Texas, we have Texas Rangers. Right. And that would have been a feather in somebody's Stetson hat if they were able to catch that person, and they never did. Robbery away from premises, that may be just taking money from this branch to that branch. If it's in the trunk of your car, technically it's covered. And then you've got forgery. And I don't know about the rest of the country, but in Texas, counterfeit checks are rampant. And that's actually covered under forgery. Now, most of your banks, like even our smallest bank, will have a $25,000 deductible. So they're self-insuring those. And so what can you do? You know, positive pay, you know, something along those lines. And if you do positive pay, make sure that you've got the dollar amount and the payee both in order to check on those. Forger securities is the next one. Then you've got counterfeit currency, which is very rare, very rarely happens. But those are your basic coverages that you'll find in every single financial institution bond. And then you've got computer crime coverage. Now, this is not cyber. This was designed if somebody were to hack into the bank and steal the bank's money, which we never see happen. But what you'll also find in there is your fraudulent wire coverage. And so fraudulent wires were really, really prevalent 4 or 5 years ago, and they've kind of died down. And there's a reason for that. Well, in the policy, which has been like this for many, many, many years, as far as I can remember, it says you have to do three things. You have to written agreement with whoever's doing the wire transfer. You have to call back on every single wire transfer. And number three, you have to verify you're talking to the customer through, you know, the text message on your phone or something like that, so that you know that you're really speaking to the customer. Now, I can't tell you how many of these we had. We probably had well over 100, maybe more. And I start thinking about it, but I don't recall many of these being paid. And so I called our carriers up and I said, hey, you guys paying these? Oh yeah, they give me some excuse how they do. But I said, okay, tell me really, why don't you? And this is what they told me. Two different carriers told me the same thing. If the bank's doing what they're supposed to do, written agreement, call back, verified, and the customer still got snookered by a third-party bad person, a fraudster. But if the bank did everything they're supposed to do, they're not liable. they're not legally liable for the loss. And if you're not legally liable for the loss, the insurance company doesn't pay. And conversely, if you didn't do what you're supposed to do, like you didn't call back, you called back a number that was, you know, in an email, you didn't call back the number that was in your system, they don't pay.
Yes.
So in short, insurance doesn't pay. Well, Brian, why is it in there? Well, if it had been 10 years ago, they might have paid because it's a one-off. But they've really pushed back. And this is the reason why I think we're seeing fewer losses, because you know this is a big deal. And if money's leaving your building, everybody stop what you're doing and ask the question, did we call back the customer in the system, the number in the system, to verify this wire transfer? And one more little side story about this. It was a small bank up in the panhandle of Texas. And the banker told me this. He said, they had a young couple save up $26,000 for a down payment on the house. They come into the bank and they said, we've got instructions to wire this money to a bank in California before we go to closing. The email supposedly came from the title company. And you probably all know where I'm going with this. So customers right there, there's nobody to call back. They send the money off. The couple goes to closing. They go, where's your check? And of course, they sent the money off to California. Now, is the bank responsible? Absolutely not. But, you know, this just goes back to, you know your customers, or just know to ask the questions. Are you sure we're supposed to send this? Or did you talk to somebody at the title company? Let me call your title company just to make sure. And title companies are very aware of this as well today, because they know they've been hacked hundreds of times, and that's how a lot of these losses occurred. So you just have to be aware of that. So that's computer systems. We have safe deposit box coverage. It's called legal liability. We can also cover your customer's contents, but most of the time we don't. We just cover you in case you allowed somebody unauthorized to get into the vault. And in 35 years of doing this, I think we've had that happen twice. And the second time it could have been a good one. It was a situation where, actually, I say three times. I'll tell you that story in just a second. A lady got divorced from her husband, and she comes in and says, I want to get in the safe deposit box. Well, she had already been taking it off, but she had the key, and she berated the young lady to let her into the safe deposit box, and she ended up taking out like a diamond necklace or something like that. Well, he realized a mistake. They called the husband up. He calls the cops. They got the diamond necklace back. But that could have been an example of legal liability where the bank could have been responsible for that. Most recently, one that I forgot, and I just remembered, we call it the comic book caper. I have a bank that had a guy who was a fraudster, a flim-flam man. I mean, he was known in the city. This guy was really bad news. Anyway, he gets a hold of some sort of death certificate and another form that allowed him to get into this person's safe deposit box. And so the bank lets him get in there. He apparently took $8,000 of cash. But more importantly, he took comic books that we understand were like first edition Superman, first edition Batman. I mean, they were worth supposedly hundreds of thousands of dollars. The cops even found out that he tried to sell them locally, but all the comic book dealers said, no way. One, we can't pay you what it's worth. And two, we don't like the fact that you have these. And they sent him on his way. So we still haven't figured out what he did with them and where. And we're still waiting for the family members to say, oh, yeah, we know he had them because here's a picture of them. And the insurance company's already paid the $8,000 cash. That wasn't an issue, but they're leaving the file open right now to see what becomes of the comic book caper. But that's, again, an example of legal liability for the safe deposit boxes. ATMs, I mentioned a minute ago that smash and grabs were happening. Did they happen in Tennessee? I don't know. Were they happening up there?
It was right after I graduated college. We had several banks, which, like I had mentioned earlier, I'm in very rural areas. They would hook a chain up connected to a truck and yank and take the entire ATM. It happened. One bank got hit twice within a 7 or 8 month span. As soon as they got the new one, they came and took the other one. And then, yeah. I mean, it was very prevalent for a couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a big, it started during COVID. They couldn't go in and rob banks, but somebody, discovered, oh my gosh, there's like average of $40,000 in machines out there. And so at least in Texas, it began in the Houston area, and they had a task force just for this. And they informed us, the Houston Police Department informed us that there was a gang in the Houston area that in order to join the gang, it cost $50,000. And so it's like a country club. You got to pay that much money to get inside the gang. And so that's what really kind of kicked it off. And then one of my insurance companies called me up and goes, Brian, what's happening with his ATMs? I went, I don't know what's happening with our ATMs. He had already been seeing this happening even before I recognized it. And so then we started looking into it. pardon me. And it turns out Wells Fargo, Bank of America, you know, all the big banks had already gotten together to keep a task force to keep an eye on this. And then we started keeping track of just our community banks. And we had over 280 smash and grabs happen to our community banks. And they kept on spreading further west. I think they might have gotten up to the panhandle. I think it's just word of mouth after a while got out there. But you just don't see those anymore. Why? Because everybody's wrapped their ATMs now with significantly stronger barriers. And so we don't see those happening quite as much. But they were happening, you know, on a weekly basis. Anyway, the cash and the ATMs are covered under the financial institution bond. And, you know, typically it's whatever the value is of the most expensive, excuse me, the value of the most highest full, how do I put it, ATM you have in your system. In other words, you may have 10 ATMs and one's got 100,000, the rest all have 25. Well, you have to insure it for 100,000 just in case they hit that one. And so that's what is involved there. There's other, you know, little coverages you'll have in there. You have claims expense coverage. You have, you know, some other things. But you know, there's sometimes I call them the gotchas that you have to do what you have to watch out for. You know, going back to, for example, under embezzlement, in the policy it says something along the lines of, if there's a loss involving a loan, then the bank has to make sure. They do a couple of things. One, they have to make sure that the loan officer who was involved knew it was a bad loan and a third party was involved and that he or she made some sort of benefit. Example, you know, you got a loan officer in cahoots with this fraudster and they cook some books or they bring in some information and he presents it to a loan committee and says, yeah, this guy's got all the money in the world. It's a great loan. And I think we should go ahead and do this loan for $1 million or whatever it should be. And the loan committee says, okay, we're going to do that. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, he's driving a new Mercedes or something like that. Okay. The reason why it's written that way is because insurance companies don't pay for stupid bankers and bad loans. Okay. And so, you know, I've had this happen before. We've had a banker call me up and I said, I think this guy's stealing. I said, start digging. And he started digging and realized, no, it's just an idiot. I mean, he was loaning money to the same people. He wasn't verifying whether they had enough money to anyway, they were all just bad loans to the tune of $300,000, $400,000, whatever it was. So you have that written there. Another thing we have in a financial institution bond, if you're ever bored and you want to read a policy, you go to the very last page and typically it's under conditions, what's the other word? Anyway, I think it's just under condition. It says this policy ceases to exist. Oh, cancellation and condition. This policy ceases to exist as soon as you become aware, you being an executive officer of the bank, become aware of a dishonest act of an employee. And dishonest is not, you know, it's not a defined term. It just says dishonest act of an employee. And so I bet you once or twice a year, let's say I get a phone call from a banker and say, hey, listen, you know, this employee's had two DWIs, you know, is that reason for us to, you know, say he's no longer covered, we can fire him? No, that's not dishonest. Some policies will go on to say something further, though. It says, however, if the dishonest act occurred before they're employed with the bank, it was not employment related, and it was less than, they'll say, $2,500 or something in the policy, then he's okay. He or she's fine. You walk past the break room and you hear, you know, Mary Jane saying, yeah, I stole a watch from Walmart when I was 18. Okay. If you didn't have the however part of the policy, technically she's no longer bondable. Okay. But again, the policies normally go on to say was before they worked for the bank, it was not employment related, and it was less than $2,500. Okay. So you don't have to worry about that. Yeah. But that's one of the gotchas that you can also find in policy.
Yeah.
I can say
from experience, there was a bank that I worked for quite a few years that I was over the wire department. And when you were talking about the callback procedures and how you have to do things so explicitly, during that time, we had been hit with a pretty big fraudulent wire, and we were not going through with those procedures. And I still see it today. Some of the banks that I've worked with, like, that's when I look at wires, that's one thing that I'm always telling them. Are you aware of what's in your policy, your insurance policies? And do you understand that we're doing these callback procedures and taking these additional steps in order to make sure if something does happen that we've done what we were supposed to do? And so having this, I hope that all of our listeners listening to this kind of are hearing what is required in order to make the policies kind of kick in, because that's a huge thing, is for people to understand why we have to do this stuff. And that those processes are required and why they are in there, too. I think that's great.
I know. It's really important. And again, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, and maybe your agent has a way around this. But again, I've never seen a policy respond because of the fact, as I said, if they do everything they're supposed to do, then theoretically, the bank shouldn't have a loss. I mean, we even had a bank director have his computer hacked. And here comes an email supposedly from him to Lindsay, who's his ace, who does all the wire transfers for him. And he's very, 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 very wealthy. And says, wire $900,000 to this bank in China. And so his ace, who's authorized to do wire transfers for him, contacts the bank he's a director with and says, wire $900,000 to the bank in China. The bank called her back twice. Are you sure? Yes. Send it. $900,000 goes off. He comes back from vacation. What did you do? Now, because he's a bank director, do we pay? Nope. We didn't pay because they recognize. And then, you know, most recent, the last loss we had, very experienced banker, 20 years experience doing this. And she called back the customer at the number that was in the email she received. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, she was speaking to the bad guy when she called him back. And the president called me up shaking his head. I go, I didn't see him, but I know he was shaking his head. I know this isn't covered. And once he explained to me, I said, nah, you lack remedy coverage.
Yeah.
And that's why we're not having those losses anymore. It's because everybody seems to know.
Right. Right. And so what is one piece of advice that you could leave our listeners with for those people that are involved in insurance and selecting that for their institution?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, you know, when I first started teaching these classes, and I can go back to the early 90s, I would have in a classroom, usually I'm trying to remember who would be operations conference or something like that. And I had 40 or 50 people in the room, and I would used to ask the question, you know, who here handles the insurance? And maybe half the hands would go up. And I used to say, is it because you're the last one hired, closest to the file, or you're being punished? And everybody would laugh and say, yeah, that was the case. Well, that's not the case anymore. Typically, I'm dealing with the CFO, if not the president themselves, okay, because they recognize the seriousness of this coverage, where it used to be, yeah, whatever, we'll just let so-and-so handle it. It's not a big deal. This week I was in a bank and I mentioned that to this one CFO. He goes, yeah, and it's expensive. It's not cheap like it may have been years ago. It's very expensive. And again, it could really adversely affect the financial wherewithal in the bank. And so, you know, just make sure that you have a professional that you know, knows what they're doing, understands cyber insurance, understands, a lot of times, well, we let our local agent handle the building insurance and the automobile insurance, and you know, we're going to let you handle it. We call it the professional lines. I said, that's fine. But just know that our biggest loss in 35 years was not bond, or cyber. It was an automobile claim and was $4.5 million. And then most recently, our largest claims have been roof claims. That can really bite you as well if it's not handled correctly. But I think just having somebody who really understands your business is vitally important. Still understanding everything about banking, but
right.
I always say by osmosis.
I never will understand everything about banking.
No, they probably never will understand it.
Absolutely not. Well, I am so excited, Mr. Bryan, to have you back to go through other types of policies. And I thank you so much for joining us today and explaining and really getting into bond and financial insurance. Really appreciate that.
I appreciate being here. I'm happy to come back anytime.
Yeah, we look forward to continuing these conversations. And for the rest of our listeners, that's Banking Matters.